It's time for Bleed Tech Blue, brought to you by Lincoln Agency. This is your source for Louisiana Tech sports news. For the next 90 minutes, Bleed Tech Blue goes deep inside La Tech football, basketball, and recruiting. Now here's your host, Jonathan Ford.
Well, we're back. It feels like it's been forever, but welcome to Bleed Tech Blue Radio here on ESPN Radio 97.7. I am Jay Ford, your host here on Bleed Tech Blue Radio. We're brought to you this year by National Jewelry, Fairway Carts, Dowling Smokehouse, Chevy Land Chevrolet in Shreveport, and Maxwell's Market in Shreveport. Well, guys, we got a new guy on the show this year.
That's right.
Jason is he's got several kids at home. He's got responsibilities that extend beyond the radio studio.
Well, actually, you know, the listening market can only take me for, like, every so often. Every week's a little much.
But no longer are we the Twin Towers of radio.
Yeah, tower and a half, I guess.
But like I tweeted last night, and I know you're not on Twitter a whole lot, but I did mention you, although you have no idea because you're never on Twitter.
I got the email.
Oh, you did get the email.
Yeah.
The three worst golfers in Ruston are here. We're going to bring you some radio. The third guy being Jared King. He goes by Jay King in public, but that will be just way too confusing. So he's going to be Jared here.
A little too confusing to have two J's on the show.
Be way too confusing. And Jason, actually, on the message board is Jay. So that's confusing enough.
Yeah, everybody thinks I'm you and asks me questions, and I don't know.
It happens all the time.
It's great.
So anyway, Jared will be joining me this year when Jason will fill in whenever Jared can't make it. And so Jason's not gone, but the majority of time will be Jared and myself. Louisiana Tech replaced its athletic director since the last time we had a radio show. Tommy McClellan from McNeese State is the new athletic director, and he will be joining us at 7:15 talking Louisiana Tech sports. And we'll ask him some questions. Conference USA announced some bowl games today, and we'll get into that. But they announced six bowl games today.
Yeah, and it's a little misleading. They said, yeah, we got five bowl games or whatever. It's really three. It could be three out of five every year, but they're basically locked into three through ESPN. Then they added the New Orleans Bowl. And so it's a nice little start. I still feel like you don't want your conference champion in the Beef O'Brady's Bowl or something like that.
Or even the New Orleans Bowl for that matter.
Yeah, you really want to get they used to have the Liberty Bowl, but if they could get something like the Liberty Bowl, the Sun Bowl, some kind of middle tier bowl to have your champion and maybe play them against the Mountain West champion or a better team from a bigger conference, it'd be a nicer game, and hopefully they're still working on that.
But anyway, the lineup is the Armed Forces Bowl, the Heart of Dallas Bowl, the Hawaii Bowl, the Beef O'Brady's Bowl, the New Mexico Bowl, and the New Orleans Bowl. Traditionally, the New Orleans Bowl has been the number two Conference USA team against the champion from the Sun Belt Conference. It'll be interesting to see how that changes. Will it stay the number two? Will it be the number one versus the number one? I would imagine in the first year it'll probably be the number one versus the number one.
I guess so, yeah. Or hopefully, you know, like in years past, if the WAC had a team go undefeated or with one loss, they would try to move them to another bowl.
And there are two more, but they're brand new bowls, and we don't know how they're going to fit in. One is an international bowl, being the Bahamas Bowl.
Really?
Being played in a 15,000-seat stadium called Thomas Robinson Stadium. And also there's a bowl going to be in Boca Raton, played at FAU Stadium at Florida Atlantic.
Well, there are several new bowls proposed. They added a couple last year, and then this year they were going to add the Boca Bowl, and they were talking about another one in Miami, talking about one in Little Rock. And I guess not all of them got passed.
And then one in the Montgomery, they were talking about it on Bayou Sportsline, the Camellia Bowl.
Yeah, okay. I guess if Shreveport can have one, Little Rock can have one, but
what about Montgomery? You got something against Montgomery?
Bring on, you know. Play it at midnight. Whatever. Don't get me start singing.
You just went there.
You know, if it's going to be a bad pun, I'm going to bring it up. Every time.
I mean, you almost left me speechless on the first show of season six.
I do it every year. Dora travels to Ruston for a visit.
Gosh, yeah, I forgot that you did that.
Dora explores his options.
Yeah, you did do that.
Oh, man.
But, yeah, this is season number 6. It doesn't feel like it's been 6 years since we started Bleed Tech Blue Radio, but it is. We're thankful for every year. It's been great. Gracing the presence of the radio waves and letting people hear more about Louisiana Tech sports than they had before through that medium. Louisiana Tech, Jason, replacing your sister-in-law, Leah Beasley. She went to Mississippi State to be the marketing director for Mississippi State Athletics. So Tech's got to have a new marketing person, and they hired Jay Luxus from Army.
Yeah, and it looks like, you know, he's got experience in minor league baseball. He's been with Army in 3 or 4 different capacities for the last probably 4 years, so he's got some experience. And he's got experience, you know, running games and doing the halftimes and all that kind of stuff. So that's going to lead right into his job here. And so it's good to have somebody with that kind of experience to come in.
Well, with a Tech person leaving in Leah and somebody that's been here a long time, it's not an easy replacement because she's been around and she knows the politics around Louisiana Tech. And that's always half the battle when you come to any job, whether it's a public sector job or a private sector job, is learning the politics and how it all works. So I'm sure that he's going to have some warm-up time, if you will, to get used to the job, but he'll be just fine. And then let's just go ahead and jump right into football talk, because of course that's why everybody wants to listen. That's what the reason people listen to us is football. When you look at some newcomers on the team that you expect to contribute greatly this season, you have to think of a guy like Daniel Cobb at middle linebacker, who's been running with the ones all fall. Xavier Woods from West Monroe High School, who's been running with the ones all fall camp. Trent Taylor from Evangel, that's been having a wonderful fall camp. Eddie Johnson from Navarro Junior College, who's been having a great fall camp. Honestly, when you've got 32 seniors leave after one season, Jared, there's going to be tons of newcomers that are going to contribute.
Yeah, it's difficult, but at the same time, with the level of talent that they're coming in with these new guys, like with Xavier Woods, right out of high school, running with the ones through spring, then had a great scrimmage this past weekend. A guy like – he can step into a secondary that really had some trouble last year doing anything. Xavier Woods, a guy like him. Also, Daniel Cobb. When you look at the defense last year, especially the linebacking core, they were weak. A guy like Daniel Cobb could immediately come in and fill a need. I mean, he was the second leading tackler 2 years ago for Texas Tech. And then another guy, Tony Johnson, JUCO. We'll have to see what happens with him. But
he plays middle linebacker as well, but you got to have a rotation at that position of middle linebacker, because you can't leave a guy out there for all 70 to 100 snaps or he'll be dead by the end of the game.
Sure.
Let's talk about that secondary, two safeties that have been running with the ones really the entire fall camp, of Thomas McDonald from Navarro and Terrell Pinson from Mississippi Junior College. Terrell Pinson, of course, signed initially with West Virginia in the early signing period and ultimately didn't make it into school, and they dropped him, and now he's at Tech in school and has made waves, a 6'3", 230-pounder. What more can you ask for in a strong safety?
Yeah, and you know, you've got a couple of 6'3" guys in McDonald and Pinson. They're going to bring height. I was looking forward to seeing what a couple of second-year guys could do, Lloyd Grogan and Kentrell Bryce, but they're not going to be able to come in and just take that position without having to earn it. They've got these two 6'3" junior college guys to fight for, and so that's good anytime you can have some competition. And you mentioned Woods, Jared. I mean, to have a guy like that and a Darius Barnes come in who's really going to get, for what it amounts to, his first real year of playing time, those are two of the top signees of the last two classes, and to be able to just stick them out on the field immediately, that's going to that shows, number one, the lack of experience and talent that they had in the backfield the last couple of years, but also shows how good those players were when they signed them.
The issue in the secondary this year for Tech won't be talent. There's lots of talent in that secondary, but they're almost all inexperienced. Levander Liggins is the lone player that has any D1 FBS playing experience, and
a little bit from Bryson Abraham,
but he's a two right now.
Yeah,
he's not a starter. When Bryson gets out there with the twos, he's going to be the only one that's got any playing time outside of Kendall Hayes in that secondary. And whenever you're talking about a secondary, experience goes a long way.
Yeah, and then with the linebackers, you mentioned Cobb. Both linebacker spots are going to be brand new. You've got Cobb and Johnson, both transferred in, juniors. The outside linebacker is going to be either Mitch Villamez or Andre Wiggins, both transferred in, or maybe Bo Feet, the lone person who came here as a freshman. Mike Strang also came here as a freshman. Is in the mix at middle linebacker, but right now he's running third.
But you look at that outside linebacker position with Mitch Villamez, he would be a newcomer as well. He was here this spring. He's got great speed, great sideline-to-sideline speed. I think this defense has a lot more team speed than we've seen in quite some time.
Well, yeah, he's a guy that played a lot of safety in junior college. So, you know, he's moving into the linebacker spot, and he's 230 pounds. It's not like he's too small for that spot. And Bo Feet, you know, is also former defensive back. So bringing a lot of speed to the table, and I think with Coach Dameron, the defensive coordinator, coming in with multiple sets, he's going to be way more aggressive than the last defensive coordinator, so you're going to see more blitzes. They're going to change things up more and try to confuse the offense, and I think that's going to bring more turnovers. Whenever you run the kind of fast-paced offense they run, I understood what the previous coaching staff talked about with, you know, just let, you know, lay back, don't give up the big play. Bend but don't break, and make them make a mistake. Hope they'll make a mistake. If they're going to run 90 plays, then the odds are they're going to turn the ball over some. Well, yeah, maybe, but also you're going to keep your defense on the field. They're going to get worn out. They're going to get scored on, and obviously they ranked last in the country in total defense, so I think the better way to go about it is be aggressive. If your offense is aggressive, be aggressive on defense. Go for the interceptions. Try to get the sacks to set up long, third and long, and I think that's what they're going to do.
And you look at the defensive line before we take the first break. We'll talk about the offense on the other side of the break. But the defensive line, even in the two deep, there's not a single newcomer. They've all been on the team, and all have seen significant playing time, whether it's at left defensive end with Vontarius Dory and Kendrick James, IK and Impali and Kevin Kisseberth at right end.
Well, and even Andre Taylor. So you got five defensive ends with experience.
And then at defensive tackle with Shaq Lucas and Vernon Butler, and then Justin Jellybean Ellis and Malcolm Pishon. It's almost crazy that defensive line, the depth that it has for a 9AQ program. Let's take the first break, and on the other side of the break, we'll talk about the offense, compare last year's team to this year's team, what some holes are that need to be replaced. This is Bleed Tech Blue Radio. Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio. We've got new rejoiners. We'll get used to them. Little growing pains. No music. We're used to music as a buffer. But anyway, welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio here on ESPN Radio 97.7. I am Jay Ford, your host. Join with me is Jared King and Jason Jones. This is episode one of season six. Our sponsors this season: National Jewelry, Fairway Carts, Dowling Smokehouse, Chevy Land Chevrolet in Shreveport, Maxwell's Market also in Shreveport. And this year we're presented by Lincoln Agency. Last year's team, the offense, obviously one of the best offenses the nation's ever seen, any level of football. But you lost the majority of the passing offense with the four of the five offensive linemen are gone. Two of the leading receivers are gone. The quarterback is gone. But the good news is the running backs are back, and the offensive line has some talent and some experience coming back. But then let's get a little bit more in depth on the depth chart on offense, talking about the newcomers.
Basically, you've got probably 10 different or 11 different offensive linemen that had a chance to be a starter, and you've probably got 20 different receivers. I mean, it's just crazy the amount of receivers they've got to work in.
You look at the offense. Scotty Young is expected to be the starter for NC State. He's had a good fall. He had a good spring. He doesn't turn the ball over very much. He makes really good decisions with Ryan Higgins, the redshirt freshman, being the number two quarterback, and Paul Harris, the transfer from Northwestern State, being that number three guy. So really all three of those players in the three deep, normally you just go on a two deep, but for quarterback, we'll talk about three, they're all new. Scotty Young, decorated high school career, four-star player out of Denton Ryan High School. 6'2", 210-pounder. He's a junior, has 2 years of eligibility left at Louisiana Tech. Of course, started his college career at Texas Tech and has transferred to Louisiana Tech. And he, for a spread offense, he brings almost everything you want to the table. Probably his weakness is his mobility, but I think he's more mobile than people really give him credit for. But his accuracy, his quick release, and his, of course, his decision making are what make him almost the perfect quarterback for the spread.
Yeah, and you want somebody that's going to be calm back there and not make mistakes in that kind of offense. And that's what Cameron did. Cameron did have a good touch on his long ball. He tended to let the kind of screen passes sail on him a little bit. But for the most part, he was effective in that offense last year. And I think that's the way Scotty will be. You're not going to see a whole lot of turnovers. He's going to be efficient, have a high completion percentage. I liked what Higgins brought, especially in the spring game, but you saw him force the throw and get a pick. He fumbled it because he didn't go down soon enough. And that's just part of a learning experience. That'll come with time. He is exciting. And I think if he had to play this year, I think they'd be fine. But you've got the more experienced guy, the veteran guy in Young, and I think it's going to fit this team better.
And you look at the left wide receiver position, newcomers being Sterling Griffin, the transfer from South Florida, where, of course, Skip Holtz was a season ago. He's running with the twos right now. Carlos Henderson from McDonough 35 in New Orleans, a true freshman, also at that left receiver position, and Kevin Gary on the left side as well. The starter being, of course, DJ Banks from West Monroe High School. We'll get more into the guys that have been here for a while later in the show, right now focusing on these newcomers. You look at the right wide receiver, or let's go ahead and get more in depth on the left side. Sterling Griffin comes in as a transfer. It's been rumored for months, honestly. They finally got the paperwork done. He graduated from South Florida. Doesn't have to sit down a year because he has graduated. He'll be a graduate student at Tech. You look at him, and he looks a lot like Quentin Patton, and he wears his number. I know those are huge shoes to fill, probably impossible shoes to fill, but he has the ability.
Well, and the position next to him, you know, Paul Turner's not quite as big at 5'10", but that's a guy, especially after the spring, you're thinking, okay, if somebody's going to be the go-to guy after Quentin leaves, it's going to be this guy. Well, they still don't know if he's going to get to play or not, and we're a week and a half away from the first game. So without him there, you know, you've got some veterans like Richie Casey, Andrew Guyot you can turn to try to be a comfort zone for the new quarterback. But then it's going to take somebody like a Sterling Griffin or a transfer like Kevin Gary to come in. 6-foot guy that has experience going out, getting open, and catching the ball. And that's going to be good just to have some guys that have done it before, on at least at the junior college level, and in Griffin's case, doing it at South Florida.
And the inside receivers with the H-backs, Hunter Lee is, of course, the starter. And then the surprise, I know really not the surprise, because I knew how good this guy was coming out of high school at Evangel High School, but Trent Taylor has really wowed everyone at Tech with his performance this fall, and this summer. He was outstanding in the weight room for Coach Hester, another new hire for Tech. We'll get into that later. But he's 5'9", 175, and people raise the red flag and say, he's only 5'9"? It doesn't matter with this kid.
Well, and that's what Boise State did to Louisiana Tech in the WAC all those years. You'd have 5'9 guys like Lyle Feet, Hunter Lee, Trent Taylor, Andrew Guyot, and they would just get open, catch the ball, first down, line up, do it again.
Run perfect routes.
And you know, they're not the 6'3", 4'4 guys that everybody wants in recruiting, but they're the guys that get the job done.
And you look at that H-back receiver position, Trent Taylor's the only newcomer that is likely to contribute at that position. So that's a good thing for this offense, because you've got some veterans that understand the game of football and what to do when the lights turn on. You look at the Y receiver position, or the right inside receiver position, the newcomer that really should contribute a lot this season is Eddie Johnson. Eddie Johnson, when he walks in the room, you think, oh my gosh, that guy's a football player. 6'3", 230-pound receiver, runs like a gazelle. He's been out some this this fall with some injuries, but he'll be back for NC State and really has – he plays at a high level. At a high school, he signed with Baylor, had to go to Hargrave Military Academy for prep school. Then he had to go to Navarro College out of the prep school. So he's been around the block. He's not a young guy. He's been around the game of football for quite some time. And there's really not another receiver on the roster with as big of a body as he has.
Yeah, I mean, you've got a couple of taller guys like Greenwalt and Cathcart, but, I mean, Eddie Johnson and even the linebacker Tony Johnson at 6'3", 250, I mean, you've got a couple of guys that look more like defensive ends and tight ends. So, I mean, they're going to give you some size out, you know, at receiver and linebacker.
You look at the offensive line, that's really where the bulk of the newcomers are seen on offense. At left tackle, Jens Danielson, Kansas junior college transfer with Darryl Brown, the redshirt freshman backing him up at left tackle. At right tackle, Jeremy Graffrey or Mitchell Bell. I think it could be either one of those guys come NC State. Jeremy Graffrey's been on the team for quite some time, but Mitchell Bell at 6'4", 330, he's a road grader.
Yeah, and he's probably more like 6'2". He is just a big old wide dude, and he's a tough guy too.
He's probably
he's going to maul some people.
Honestly, he's one of the most athletic guys on the offensive line. It's hard to take that title away from a guy like Vince Kano, who
Vince Kano was built to play center.
He was built to play center, and I have witnessed via video him doing a backflip. You find me another 6'2", 305-pound man that can do a backflip.
Yeah, and we interviewed him when he first came out of
Kilgore.
Yeah, I was going to say Marshall, but that was Matt Shepherd. I mean, years ago, and you could just see the kid's energy, and you know, you knew he's going to be a good kid and a hard worker, and to see him finally getting to start after switching to defensive line last year, it's a good thing for him.
They move Larry Banks from tackle to guard. We'll get more. He's been here a while, so we'll get into him later. Trey Carter, the number two left offensive guard, is a newcomer from Georgia Military. And, you know, Jason, when I see that guy at practice, he looks the part, and Tech will be in fine hands with Trey Carter next season, even if with Larry Banks being gone.
Yeah,
and honestly, Larry Banks hasn't gotten his waiver yet, so he's another one they're waiting on with being a week and a half out from the first game.
Yeah, and so there's 10 guys on your depth chart. The 11th guy is Josh Robinson, who's a third-year sophomore, and he's been, you know, kind of a hot prospect the last couple of years. He's one of the young guys that
– and he'll be fine.
You thought would be able to come in and play this year. So, you know, if Banks isn't able to play or if somebody goes down, there's tons of depth here. Robinson can step in and play guard.
And John Greenwalt, the wide receiver's twin brother, Richard Greenwalt's an offensive lineman. At media day, I asked John, I said, y'all are twins, but you don't look anything alike. One's a wide receiver and one's an offensive lineman. He said, yeah, my brother started playing video games, and that led to his weight gain. He blamed it on Tony Hawk Pro Skater 1 on the N64.
Wow.
You can relate to those days.
Yeah, but I didn't get fat till after college.
And it was not because of video games.
Yeah.
But you look at this offensive line, and they're going to be okay.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of huge guys, a lot of talent there, and we talked about all the depth at receiver. Obviously, there's talent at running back with Kenneth Dixon and Tevin King. So, what's the key? I mean, it's just going to be that offensive line kind of finding some cohesion and working together, and then the quarterback making it happen, the trigger man. So, the talent's there. The pieces are in place. Just got to see what happens on the field.
We're going to take our second break. We're going to open up the phone lines. Give us a call, 818-888-993-7762, 888-993-7762. Give us your feelings on what you're expecting to see on out of the offense, the defense from Tech this season. Give us your call, 888-993-7762. This is Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. Welcome Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio here on ESPN 97.7, presented by Lincoln Agency here in Ruston. Go see our friends at Lincoln Agency for all your insurance needs. Visit one of our other sponsors, National Jewelry, Faraway Carts, Dowling Smokehouse, Chevyland Chevrolet in Shreveport, or Maxwell's Market in Shreveport. Let's get into that offense. Tony Peterson led one of the number one pass offense in the country. Believe it or not, it was not Tech last year with a pass offense. He led it at Marshall as the passing game coordinator. He is now the sole offensive coordinator for Louisiana Tech, and the cupboard's not bare for Mr. Peterson.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking about all the depth at receiver, offensive line. It's just a matter of who's going to separate from the pack and kind of be the starters and be the go-to guys. But it's all going to start with Kenneth Dixon. I mean, the guy had like three or four carries in the spring game. You don't see him much in the scrimmages. They just don't want to get a nick on the guy, a scratch on the guy, and he's just going to get out there and roll over people. I expect NC State, I mean, they're going to know about him, obviously, from watching film last year, but I don't think they're going to realize how big and how strong and how fast he is.
I don't think they're going to be prepared for Tevin King, his lightning. The lightning to his thunder, as I said on Instagram several weeks ago.
Well, and what was funny in the Houston game last year, you know, it's thunder and lightning, but then again, I mean, Dixon's just as likely to run around you. And King, how many times in the Houston game did he just go up into the middle of the pile? You can't find him. Then he squirts out the other side. He's in the end zone. So he's not one of these little scat backs that's going to try to avoid contact. He'll get up in there and just get lost behind the big guys.
But you look at the style of offense that Tech will play this year, that's probably the biggest question for fans. Will they play the up-tempo style that Tony Franklin and Sonny Dykes brought back to Ruston? And the answer is yes. The tempo's going to be up-tempo. Will it be to the extent as it was last year? I don't believe so. If the defense is playing well and getting some three and outs, yes. But if the defense is struggling, they're going to slow the game down. They're going to do whatever they've got to do to make the game able to be have a victory. Last year, I don't think the Tech did that very well. When the defense was struggling, Tech still tried to score as many points as possible, and that sets up for some of these high scoring games that are scary. And you're like, how is this game as close as it is? I don't think we're going to see that this year. Will we see any 50 point games? Possible, maybe against Lamar, but I don't think it'll be the norm. I'm expecting scores to be in the mid-30s to 40 would be my guess, would be the upper range of how many points this team will score.
Well, anytime you can score in the 30s, you got a great chance to win. So the key is just, you know, last year's team tried to score 50 because they were going to give up 49. And so, you know, you want to still score 30 but keep the other team in the 20s. And I think the defense will be much better equipped to hold the opposing team down a little bit.
But, you know, when we talk about the first two running backs – and Dixon and King, Marlon Seats from Houghton and Alcorn State is not terrible. He's actually a pretty good running back. And Blake Martin also is a running back that both of those guys probably would play for other teams.
Well, and they're walk-ons. Brandon Davis is a walk-on. There's another
Brandon Davis is gone.
Okay. Well,
Boston Scott.
Boston Scott from where? Redentrious or?
He's from Zachary.
You're
right area.
So, yeah, I was getting down there. So you get all these talented walk-ons showing up. It's because they want to play in this offense, but you're not going to get a scholarship running back right now with a young Kenneth Dixon in the lineup. You know, nobody's going to want to sign with Tech and had to be his backup for 2 or 3 years. So maybe this coming class, well, they did get the commitment out of Houghton,
Jared Kraft, yeah,
and you know, maybe in future years it won't be a problem, but like this past year, I mean, you couldn't even talk to a running back at Tech.
No. And then let's switch gears to quarterback. We've talked in depth pretty well at quarterback, but Scotty Young with his accuracy, I think Tech's going to run a lot more plays to the middle of the field, especially with guys like John Greenwalt and Eddie Johnson and Trent Taylor and Hunter Lee that are such good players in the middle of the field. Last season, the majority of the offense was between the hash and the sideline. But that's because of how much talent was out at the wide receiver position with Quentin Patton, Miles White. Of course, DJ Banks is back. When you've got three guys of that caliber, of course you're going to spend a lot of time from the hashes out. But this year, I think you're going to see that reversed a little bit and maybe play more towards the middle of the field.
Yeah, I mean, you've got enough people. Use the entire field and really spread it out. I mean, it only takes 4 or 5 yards at a time. And now, of course, you've got to account for incompletions. But, you know, I think if Scotty's as accurate as we think he's going to be, you know, they're going to be one of these teams that kind of just marches down the field. They're not going to be going for the huge plays as much as last year's team, you know, but just work it down the field and get down there and let Kenneth and Tevin do their thing.
And then you look at the wide receiver position with DJ Banks, Sterling Griffin, who's another proven veteran, and Carlos Henderson really has been a special player thus far in the fall. He's seen reps at punt return and kick return. That tells you his explosiveness. Anytime they put a true freshman at punt return or kick return, he's an explosive player, and that really fits Carlos Henderson to a T.
Well, and let's talk about special teams a little bit, because you've got DJ Banks back there who's a senior, and his experience is going to be counted on. He was steady last year. But, yeah, they're probably looking for that explosiveness out of somebody like Carlos Henderson or Trent Taylor, one of the young guys, or Tevin King possibly returning kicks. And then we haven't even talked about replacing a two-time Ray Guy Award winner at punter or a three- or four-year starter at kicker in Matt Nelson.
He's a four-year starter. Yeah. He started as a true freshman at Auburn in the first game at 135 pounds.
So we've got two freshmen coming in, and it's going to be a little bit different.
It will be, but you know, they've got some able-bodied guys. When you look at true freshman Jonathan Barnes out of Woodlawn High School in Baton Rouge, Kyle Fisher out of Texas, he's a sophomore. He's had a good fall. Both of them have had good falls. Logan McPherson out of Fort Payne, Alabama, and Gerald Schaus out of Evangel in Shreveport. If they can find consistency in the punting game, those guys will be just fine. Do you ever replace a two-time Ray Guy Award winner equally? Probably not. But those guys have the ability to punt at a high level. It's just a matter of can they become consistent enough to contribute on a week-in and week-out basis. Looking at offensive line, we talked about Jens Danielson. He's a very athletic left tackle. And then at right tackle, those two guys between Graffrey and Bell will be just fine. Offensive guard, the veteran and probably leader of this group is Matt Shepard, who has started for the last 2 years, if my memory serves me correctly. This will be his third year starting at offensive line, and really will anchor that unit with Vince Cano, who's bounced around between offensive line and defensive line the last couple of years. I think this offense will be better than people expect it to be. There's, like I've been saying, they're not without talent. Can the offensive line gel quick enough is probably the largest question, but this offense will be able to move the ball on most teams. Jerry, what do you see as maybe the spot on the offense that concerns you the most?
Well, besides the obvious lack of experience at the offensive line position, really everything looks smooth. Last year, looking back at Marshall's offense, when Tony Peterson was the offensive coordinator, Rakim Cato threw for 4,200 yards and also was third highest in the country in completion percentage. One guy ahead of him was Colby Cameron. But so I think Scotty, with his accuracy, with his big arm, he's got touch. The only downside to Scotty is that he's not mobile. And with an offensive line that lacks experience, do you have a concern there that he might not be able to make a decision fast enough through the spring and through the scrimmage? I don't think so. He's always been able to find his reads quickly, and he's been able to make an accurate pass and a quick pass. He's got a quick release.
You know, the part about Scotty that I think is one of his better attributes is when there's nothing there, he knows when to get rid of the ball, or especially on a screen pass that he sees is covered up, he does a good job of throwing it at the feet of the receiver. That way he doesn't get intentional grounding and he doesn't lose yards, and that they live to play another down.
And that's a stark contrast to what you see with Ryan Higgins. With Ryan, it seems like if his first read isn't there, he doesn't know what to do, and so he starts scrambling around.
And he breaks the pocket down, and he starts scrambling. And that comes with age. I think Ryan Higgins has the tools he needs to play quarterback at this level. It's just he needs some time under the tutelage of Peterson, who has, of course, coached great quarterbacks in Byron Leftwich and Chad Pennington, who have gone on to have good NFL careers. He just has to be there and listen to what Coach Peterson is telling him to do.
Yeah, and just and rein that in a little bit, because you know when he does tuck and run, he's got the ability to run and make some people miss and make some stuff happen. And then also, you know, the broken plays, you know, the receiver breaks off his route and runs to the end zone, and Higgins will find him. We saw that in the spring game. He made some exciting passes, some long passes. So he can take a broken play and turn it into something. That's one of his abilities. He's a gamer. It's just a matter of knowing when to do it and when not to. And so that'll come with experience.
The biggest thing that I think it is with the quarterback race, and it's something that Holtz has said really this week's the first time I've heard him say it, is that Ryan Higgins tries to do too much.
Yeah.
When you're a quarterback, most people hate the term game manager, but that's ultimately what you're there to do. It has some negative connotation if you're known just for your game management, but ultimately, that's your job, and you have to have the ability to manage the game, and turnovers and negative yardage plays are killers. Yeah. And that ultimately is what this quarterback race has come down to. Like I said, I think Ryan Higgins has the ability to play quarterback at the collegiate level. He just needs some time, and luckily for Tech, they've got 2 years with a guy that does have is ready for the lights to turn on and for him to begin playing. Let's take a break. On the other side of the break, we'll do the defense just like we just did the offense, but we want to hear from you. Give us a call, 888-993-7762. This is Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio here on ESPN 97.7. I am Jay Ford, the host of Bleed Tech Blue Radio, presented by Lincoln Agency here in Ruston. Visit Lincoln Agency for all your insurance needs, or one of our sponsors, National Jewelry, Fairway Carts, Dowling Smokehouse, Chevy Land Chevrolet. I'm going to get that one right eventually. Or Maxwell's Market, both Chevy Land and Maxwell's Market in Shreveport. Guys, last year's Louisiana Tech defense, statistically, let's just say it couldn't have been a whole lot worse. They were either I think they were like 120 in the country last year. Maybe, yeah. 119, and there's 122, 123.
I think it's up to 125 now. You keep getting all these teams moving up, and now the Sun Belt's added a few more, so who knows what the number is now. But
anyway, they were about 120.
They were down there. And you know, the whole defensive line comes back, and
they weren't bad last year.
They weren't. And so if they can get healthy, you know, Ellis missed some time. You know, IK had a little bit of health issue. If that guy's on the field, he's going to create some havoc. And then Ellis just creates so much – demands so much attention.
At 6'2", 350. Let's call him 350. He used to be listed at 330 last year. He's not 330. Call him 350.
And now you got somebody in Malcolm Pichon behind him that's just as big.
He's probably 330.
Yeah, but I mean, you've got some mass in there, and then Vernon Butler's 320 playing next to him. I mean, that it's a really big defensive line. They've got some guys that Kisseberth has always been productive, Kendrick James. They've got some guys that can get to the quarterback. So now, can they find these new linebackers that can plug the holes, make the plays, make the tackles, and not leave it to the safeties to clean up the mess 10 yards down the line?
You know, last year's injury to Rufus Porter that ended his career, honestly, was probably the biggest reason for the struggles on defense last season.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're trying to replace Adrian Cole and Jared Dudley, or Jay Dudley. You got these two linebackers that are very experienced, very good, and then you lose them, and you've got two guys that are seniors that are JUCO transfers that haven't had a whole lot of playing time. You're depending on them and Rufus.
And Solomon Randall.
And Solomon, so he's a senior. Then all four of those guys are gone, and so it's just totally cupboards bare, bring in the transfers, bring up the young guys.
And somehow they found depth at linebacker.
Yeah, and they've got four guys that can play, five guys really, or six guys that can play those two spots. So, yeah, they've got plenty of depth, and it's just like at receiver, just like at offensive line, who's going to step up to the top and take those starting spots down? Tony Johnson said he didn't come here to not play. He wants to start a middle linebacker, but Cobb's good too.
When you look at a 4-2-5 defense, which it's hard to call that the base defense for Coach Dameron because of how multiple the look will be. You'll see some 3-4. You'll see some 4-3. You'll see some 3-3 stack. You'll see some 4-2-5. Ultimately, I guess 4-2-5 is the base defense. And because of that, you've only got two linebacker positions to fill. And Mitch Villamez and Bo Feet and Andre Wiggins on that Sam, the strong side linebacker position, will do just fine filling in those positions. Andre Wiggins may be listed as the number three or number two linebacker, but in my opinion, has the most ability on the whole linebacking core. He's just got to click for him, and I think the sky's the limit for the guy.
Yeah.
A former safety in high school, that tells you about his speed. He's big enough to play linebacker now. I would say he's probably up to 210, 220, which is big enough to play linebacker. Mitch Villamez, he'll start game one. He's got some experience playing it in the junior college ranks. And like I talked about earlier, his speed, his sideline to sideline speed, along with Bo Feet's sideline to sideline speed, the Sam linebacking position is in fine hands. And you look at the middle linebacking position with Daniel Cobb, Tony Johnson, Mike Schrang, and Ty Hook. Ty Hook's played some outside linebacker this fall whenever the 4-3 goes out there. But somehow they found some depth at this position whenever during the spring you're thinking. You watch Coach Coons work his guys out, and he's out there with about four or five guys, and you're like, how are they gonna have a play a spring game with this few linebackers?
Yeah, some of the guys they were recruiting didn't work out, and they didn't have a huge group of signees, but they did get some transfers in here. And, you know, one of them, Nick Thomason's hurt, not even able to play. So they still don't have a ton of numbers, but they've got depth, they've got enough. And you mentioned going to the 4-3, you know, I mean, if he does any kind of 4-3 or 3-3-5, you could see somebody like Bo Feet or Ty Hook moving over to the other side and utilizing that speed. But even in the 4-2-5, it's not like they're going to be a tiny team. They got a huge defensive line, and then in that backfield, Terrell Pinson and Lloyd Grogan, when they're in the game at one of the safety spots, it's basically like a third linebacker anyway.
And then whenever they go to 3-4, just think about IK Inamkali standing up at an outside linebacker position, which is probably what he projects at the next level. He's going to have to find a 3-4 team in the NFL to want him. Or he's not going to have a career in the NFL. That's what he is. That is a 3-4 outside linebacker.
Yeah, and Kisseberth could do the same thing too. So you could see the 3-4 being used, and I think they're going to mix it up and try to confuse the offense and show them different looks. And
last season, Coach Spangler ran a lot of man defense with basically two deep, two deep safeties. This year they're going to be running a lot of zone. And some zone blitzes, and just lots of multiple looks that will confuse a defense.
And you've just got to get pressure. You've got to make them throw a throw that they don't want to make. Make them go for, you know, just take some risks. Because whenever the offense takes risks, sometimes it's going to work out for them, and sometimes it's going to work out for you.
And probably the most talented person on the defense for Louisiana Tech is Darius Barnes. I know that's a big statement, considering the talent that's on the defense. But that guy's got so much upside and potential that he's probably the most talented player on the defense. And he's starting this season at left corner with Levander Liggins starting at right corner, the lone returner in the secondary, yeah, in the starters.
And just having some of these younger newcomers coming in, like those guys and Grogan and Cantrell Bryce, Xavier Woods, I just think the defense, especially on the backfield, is in much better hands with some of these guys. These guys were big-time recruits, had some pretty big offers. Talking about Bryce, Grogan,
Pinson,
Barnes.
Barnes, of course, was committed to Mississippi State the entire recruiting process during 2011.
Cantrell Bryce, you know, had been offered by Oregon State and was thought to be committed to them for a while.
And then he had offers from Oklahoma down the stretch. They made a visit to Ruston to try to flip him late.
Lloyd Grogan was a big-time recruit for Tech. Xavier Woods was this year.
There's lots of talent in the secondary. And for me to say Adarius Barnes is the most talented guy is really saying something.
Well, it should make you feel better about the coverage, too, because it was hard for the team to cover anybody last year. So now you've got this new corner that can come in and maybe lock down the team's number one receiver. That moves Liggins to the number two guy. And then a guy like Bryson Abraham that started some last year, he's now your backup. That just shows you've got some more depth. And
But you know, you look over
more talent back there.
All of those secondary positions, there's not a single senior.
Yeah, so that just means the sky's the limit for this defense. You don't have any seniors at linebacker either. And, of course, you're going to replace three seniors across the defensive line, but they've got a whole bunch of guys behind them that are sophomores. So
let's talk about recruiting on the other side of the break and a little bit of NC State, since that game is, believe it or not, a week and a half away. And then 7:15, Louisiana Tech Athletic Director Tommy McClellan will join us talking Louisiana Tech sports. This is Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio. Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio here on ESPN Radio 97.7, presented by Lincoln Agency here in Ruston. Go see our friends at Lincoln Agency for all your insurance needs. Also visit our sponsors, National Jewelry, Fairway Carts, Dowling Smokehouse, Chevy Land, Chevrolet. I got that one right that time. Maxwell's Market. And that's it. Talk a bit of little recruiting. Tech is off to a really good start in recruiting. Jason, can you remember a time where Tech had 13 commitments at this point in the recruiting process?
No, and it seems like every year we're saying, you know, they're getting earlier and earlier, and I just think they're keeping up with the times better and not waiting until November to start. I mean, you've never seen so many kids come to Louisiana Tech camp in the summer, and they're finding players and plugging holes early on.
This summer, Tech probably hosted in their four camps, one in New Orleans, one in Baton Rouge, and two in Ruston, probably close to 1,000 kids. That's absurd.
Yeah, and early on they're picking out kids, you know, at middle linebacker or offensive line or, you know, running back, filling some needs and getting some guys that maybe didn't have another offer, but they found them at camp, they liked their talent, they went ahead and offered them. And so then they were able to go out and find some playmakers and some of the more recent commitments. I mean, two guys I'm excited about, and we're talking about some of these newcomers on the defense, like Adarius Barnes or Xavier Woods. These are some of the top signees over the last couple of years, Lloyd Grogan. So now they've got these commitments. Jalen Ferguson from St. Francisville, 6'5", already 230 pounds, defensive end. I mean, this is a guy that had several offers, Memphis, Mississippi State, NC State, Tulane, Central Florida. For him to commit that early is really big.
And he's got a brother, Jazz Ferguson, who's a 2015 wide receiver who has similar size. I don't think he's quite 6'5". But
it's like a 6'4 receiver. He's a big guy. And yeah, so next year's class, you would think, at least a head start on him. And then the other guy I'm excited about early on is Howard Wilson from DeSoto. I mean, we saw the history at DeSoto. We went to a Rivals camp over there last year. They got the big tribute to Von Miller in their hallway and all the trophies. They put out so many players every year in Big 12, SEC, you know, Division I players. And so to get a 6-foot-tall cornerback from DeSoto over the hometown SMU Mustangs, I thought that was a really big commitment.
And he has played – Howard Wilson has played linebacker the majority of his career in high school. So he's moved over to corner, and it's been a really good transition. His coach told me whenever I did a story with him earlier after his commitment. So the fact that you've got a guy that has the sheer tackling ability of a linebacker and the coverage ability of a corner, that's almost a match made in heaven. Another guy that's really exciting to me is Price Wilson, the quarterback out of Walton High School in Marietta, Georgia. I think that guy's got big time ability. He filled in for the quarterback at Walton High School who signed with Alabama last season and had great success. So he's been tested. I like a lot of these commitments. I don't even know why I said I really like him. Jared Kraft out of Houghton, the running back, 6 foot tall, 200 pounder already in high school. He could be 210, 220 pounds by the time he gets to Tech without a problem. He's got big time ability. Marlon Watts, 6 foot, 370 pound receiver out of St. Aug in New Orleans. St. Augustine, for those keeping score at home, not St. Augustine, St. Augustine.
Hey, if it's a South Louisiana team, I'm going to screw up their name, and I'm going to call them St. Augustine for sure.
St. Augustine.
Hey, one guy I'm excited about, and, you know, the last two classes under Sonny Dykes, all you hear about is junior college, junior college, junior college.
And there's one in this class.
One, but I'm excited about him because you've got two seniors at center leaving. You got the local product, Joseph Brunson, that's on the roster that's got a chance to be in the mix for starter next year. But
is he 6'4", 320 pounds?
He's close, but he's not a 320. Kirby Wixon is a wide body dude. We talked about Mitchell Bell being big and wide. Kirby Wixon's that guy, and he's coming from junior college out of Mississippi.
Hines Community College.
Listed at 6'4", 320, and he's just one of those big old thick neck offensive guard centers types. He had three other offers from Conference USA and Sun Belt teams.
He actually had an offer from Tech out of high school, but another one of those stories. You've heard it a million times. He waited too long to commit. And the offer went away. If you're a high school player listening right now, first, your favorite offer early on, take it. That's the best advice anybody could ever give someone in the recruiting process. As soon as you get an offer you like and it's early in the process, you better take it because you don't know what's going to be there come December. Because as we've been talking about, this process gets earlier and earlier as the years go by. Tech has several, probably a couple of more offensive linemen to sign, a couple of more defensive backs to commit, some more linebackers to get commitments from high school linebackers. They have one right now from Quanta Moore at Edna Carr High School in New Orleans, of course, the home of Louisiana Tech running backs coach.
Jabbar Jaluke. Well, and you're talking about maybe a couple more offensive linemen. I mean, if first of the year, they're talking about six or seven. So they could sign three more. And they've got two – we mentioned the center from junior college. They got two high school kids, really tall kids, 6 foot seven, Shane Carpenter, and 6 foot five, Deontay McCready out of Arlington, Texas. Carpenter's out of the Baton Rouge area. So these two guys didn't have offers, but – I think Matt Moore is experienced. He's going to go out there. He finds what he wants. He sees their potential, sees their talent. He's not going to wait. He's going to offer them. He's going to get them in here before anybody else can get their teeth into them. So,
and there's another one, and Michael Rodriguez that from LaPorte, Texas, that really could be an offensive tackle by the time it's all said and done. He's 6'6", 225 right now, but let's be honest.
Listed as a tight end. But
he's going to be a tackle.
Yeah, he's projecting as a tackle. So that's really three kids at the high school level
that are 6'5 and above.
Yeah, and so he really likes the height on them. You can tell that's what he's looking for, and then that's similar to what Coach Dykes looked for. You know, they went out and got I mean, he's listed at 240 here on the depth chart. He's not really that skinny, but anyway, the backup left tackle for Tech is
Darryl Brown's
a 6'5 kid, tall, skinny.
He's probably 280 now.
Yeah, and he's been here for, what, a year and a half? He's filled out.
Yeah.
And that's what they're looking for with some of these kids like Rodriguez. Get them here. Get the athletic kids that can move. Get them stronger. And don't maybe move away from the 6'7", 350s like you've seen in the past, like Big Snack and Oscar Johnson. I mean, some of these big, giant guys that were 350 pounds and couldn't move as well. Get these guys that are 250 in high school. Get them up to 290, 300.
And if you can find a guy like Jordan Mills that's 6'6", 300 pounds out of high school, he's going to play for the Bears one day.
Yeah, obviously, you'll take that.
You know, a guy that's on this commit list, Jason, out of St. Paul's in Covington, Marcus Gaines, 5'7", 155, 4'4", 40, is one of the most exciting players in the New Orleans area when he gets the ball in his hands.
Yeah, I mean, he sounds like, you know, another guy like Carlos Henderson that can come in here and play right away and help the team out, whether it's in special teams or put him on the field on offense.
I personally wouldn't be surprised to see Marcus Gaines redshirt a year and get some separation between him and Tevin King. They're very similar players. Now, is he going to play inside receiver? Is he going to play running back? That hasn't been determined yet. Is he going to play defensive back? My money's on running back. We got a phone call on the line. Who do we have? It's actually Tommy. We got Tommy. We'll wait for him on the next segment. It's for 7:15. We'll go ahead and take that early break, and on the other side of the break, we'll talk with Tommy McClellan, athletic director at Louisiana Tech. This is Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio here on ESPN Radio 97.7, presented by Lincoln Agency here in Ruston. Visit one of our sponsors, National Jewelry, Fairway Carts, Dowling Smokehouse, Chevy Land, Chevrolet in Shreveport, and Maxwell's Market in Shreveport, and, of course, Lincoln Agency. Let's go to the phone lines and talk to Louisiana Tech Athletics Director Tommy McClellan. How you doing, Tommy?
Hey, I'm doing good, guys. How are y'all?
Doing great. How's the transition been thus far?
Well, it's transitioning. I mean, you know, one minute I'm working on you know, Louisiana Tech stuff, and then the next minute I'm trying to work on Tommy McClellan and the family stuff, and so we're trying to get everyone up here. But you know, I couldn't ask for a better transition. The community, the fan base have been phenomenal. The support has been great, and I'm really looking forward to just being a permanent, you know, fixture here in terms of my family and being able to be grounded.
Of course, some Conference USA news has come out here lately. I know y'all had some meetings in Texas and last week. Some about the stipend, the athletic stipend that you guys approved that, or the conference approved it, and then the bowl stuff. Just talk about those meetings in Texas and how they went.
Well, first of all, it was a great set of meetings, and you know, I've been a part of you know, another conference previously, and you know, you have athletic directors in the room and presidents in the room, and that was probably as a productive of a meeting as I've been a part of. And I think that having the ADs and the presidents in a room is something that you probably will see more often from our league, and as we move forward, at least on a consistent annual basis, I think it helps with good decision making, because again, at the end of the day, an AD thinks like an AD and a president thinks like a president, but when you can put those two people in a room, it helps, you know, helps with different perspectives. In terms of the productiveness of the meeting, I thought it was great. It was a very, you know, just more of an overview and introductory meeting. There's a lot of new faces in the room, not just new athletic directors, but actually new team members as well, and new institutions. And so it was a really good way of kind of just kicking things off for the new year with the new members and the new faces.
Tommy, just talk about the stipend stuff and how it came up. I know that the landscape of college athletics is ever changing, especially here lately. But talk about the discussion surrounding the stipend.
Sure. Well, the first thing is that what was announced by Conference USA was that in the event that the NCAA determines that it is permissible to give a student athlete up to the cost of $2,000 up to the cost of attendance, that we agree that we would do that as a league. So we didn't vote to do that. We don't have that authority to say, hey, we're going to go out and be the first. It's an NCAA issue, but we were just wanted to be out on the front lines of things saying, hey, you know, there's a lot of talk about it. If it happens, just to reiterate, there are new presidents in the room, new ADs in the room, new institutions. Are we all around the table comfortable with saying, yes, we support this idea if it moves forward? And the answer was a resounding yes. I mean, because at the end of the day, we at Louisiana Tech and we as a member of the Conference USA, we're about putting our student athletes first. And, you know, if there are opportunities for us to give them up to the cost of attendance, up $2,000 up to the cost of attendance, then we would do that. Now, I think recently a column was written, you know, so well, how would that look financially? And somebody threw a number out at me. But, you know, it's really, the number is based on if you're on scholarship, and then if you're on scholarship, if you're full, then getting the full amount. If you're half, getting getting half the amount. So it, there's a proposal out there that wouldn't necessarily be $2,000 for every student athlete. So there's a lot of questions around it. There's not a definitive answer at this point, and it's not even permissible. So really what Conference USA was saying is, in the event that it goes this direction, we are staying as a conference. We're going to go that direction as well.
Well, Tommy, talk about football scheduling. I think we talked about this a while back. You know, I think some of Tech's recent success has gone from, hey, let's play anybody who will pay us, and let's go play Miami and Texas A&M and Auburn all in the same year. And now you're seeing games against Kansas and NC State and Illinois and Virginia and Ole Miss, and Tech's been able to win some of those games recently. And then you've also got some home-and-homes coming up in future years with South Alabama and Bowling Green. Just talk about what your philosophy is going to be and how those games kind of fit into that.
Yeah, and my philosophy is very similar to what's been happening in terms of, you know, I think look, we're in a situation, of course, most people across the country, where we're going to play a game guarantee, and we're going to go and have opportunities to bring in revenues to the institution to support our athletic programs, support our football program. But we want to remain competitive, and we want to be balanced in what we do. And so I think, you know, this year's schedule is a great example. You're playing an NC State team that is providing a game guarantee. But it is a competitive game. Then you've got Kansas it's a lesser amount of money. But at the end of the day, it's not Texas. It's not USC or Miami. And so we've got to be competitive. At the end of the day, too, you have to worry about the revenue piece. I think the home and home with Bowling Green is a good game. I think there are opportunities. This year the Army game is unique. I think that was a home and home from my understanding, and it was going to be in Rust. And now it's at Dallas, but that's a unique opportunity for us to not only make revenue, but to play in a historical venue at the Cotton Bowl and play one of the most unique teams in the entire country, and that is with our military academies at Army. So I do think it is a good philosophy to have. I like the way we've been. Last year's schedule was phenomenal. It was a great schedule. Scheduling is a big part of the piece of the puzzle and how you build success. Hopefully you'll see that. I will say that scheduling is done years in advance, so, you know, where my scheduling comes into play might be down the road.
Tommy, when you look at the revenue piece, and I know that's a large part of your job, is making sure the books look good. You look at the South End Zone project, and of course, I know a tentative date is the 2015 football season. You'd like to have that building completed. What does that building mean for revenue? And then you look at a video board for the Thomas Assembly Center. What do those pieces mean for revenue for your athletic department?
Well, there's very indirect revenue and there's direct revenue. I mean, in terms of the scoreboard, I mean, it's direct revenue. I mean, because, you know, those are advertising opportunities. And then with both of them, there's some indirect revenue. There's direct in terms of the end zone complex going to have around 300 seats in it that are going to bring direct revenue into the building, into the athletic department. But there's also indirect revenue that are associated with both of those. That's just, people just get excited. I mean, you know, I wasn't here when the video board was placed in the north end zone for football, but I've been told and I've been a part of other programs where a video board was installed, and it is an increased level of excitement. That's at a football facility that's outside, that you have somewhat distance from the facility. When you drop four screens in a basketball arena, and it's going to be twice as impactful just because of the intimacy involved in the arena and how that's going to change the environment. So it's going to impact us indirectly in terms of people coming to the games, because the video board is a fan experience, and then we're going to increase the fan experience by doing this as we move forward. And so I think both of these things are very important to what we're trying to build here and what we're trying to do. Every little bit counts and every little bit helps, but these are two major components to what we're trying to do.
And how receptive has the Tech family, because I know that's the way you guys refer to it, as the Tech family been to you on the road, as you've already been out talking to groups of people. How have they been as far as reception goes?
It's been great, but I would include you in the Tech family, right? I mean, you got Bleed Tech Blue into your company, so I mean, you got to be considered into the you're part of the Tech family. So don't exclude yourself. We haven't kicked you out of the family yet, but you know, you're in the family. It's a community. It's unbelievable. I feel I'm very humbled to be a part of it. I'm honored. It's a brand that I'm familiar with, as I've said before, and I'll say again, I'm just excited to be here. I consider it a privilege to be in this position, and don't take it for granted. So, you know, but I'm excited, and I've said before, the excitement of other people excites me. And so I think it's one of those things where it's contagious. It goes both ways. And so if I have a high energy level, it excites people. But if they in turn are excited, it makes me even more excited. And so, you know, but we can't just, you know, we've got to be focused on what we're doing. It's not just about being excited or rah-rah. You know, we there are financial pieces. There are attendance pieces. We want people to come to our games. We want them to you know, purchase our products. We want them to support where they can and be engaged into the athletic program. And there's so many ways to do that, so many various ways to do that.
Have there been any challenges that you see that are different from the FCS world and the FBS world?
Well, I think everything is relative. You know, I mean, you know, in terms of internal, I mean, dealing with student athletes, dealing with coaches and staff, there's just so much similarity. I mean, the football coach in Lake Charles is as important as the football coach is in Ruston, or the compliance officer's role in Lake Charles is as important as it is in Ruston. So things in terms of those things are very similar. You know, there's just a larger fan base. I mean, and so you're dealing with more people. I'm doing more phone interviews. I'm doing more radio interviews, doing those things expand our, but that goes back to that national brand, going back to a very high and a concentrated regional presence that we want to expand. But the fact is, it's a large base, and so we want to expand it. We want to grow it. We don't want to sit and rest where we are. But that's been the biggest thing that I've noticed, and how one-minded the fans are. Now, I know that we have some peripheral fans that we're trying to bring into the fold and could just focus in on Louisiana Tech, but for the most part, the vast majority of the people that I've interacted with are very focused on Louisiana Tech, and I think that's a good thing, and that's how we're going to move the needle. We're not going to move the needle by people being diverted and double-minded on where they want to spend their time and their energy. You know, it's about focusing on your institution, your home institution, and making it better.
You know, Tommy, you talk about those fringe folks. I don't want to call them fringe fans because that sounds bad, but fringe folks that you want to bring into the fold. Those are the kind of people you need buying season tickets, correct? And what impact do a large season ticket numbers do for athletic departments?
Well, I mean, it's the gasoline that drives it. I mean, at the end of the day, the tickets, we can build this end zone complex. We can put a scoreboard in the tack, and we can do all these things. It's like putting rims on a car. But if you can't put gasoline in the engine, it doesn't go anywhere. And so ticket sales are the lifeblood of what we do, because not only is there money transaction, is there revenue coming into the department, but people are there, and they provide energy to our student athletes. They provide support. And as a former student athlete, I can promise you there is nothing more gratifying and satisfying than being able to run out to a crowd that is energized, the seats are full, and you're ready to play. I mean, that is what college athletics is about. And whether that's our soccer team, whether that's our football team, or our tennis program, when you have people there, it builds energy. And so not only is it about revenue, it's about support. So tickets are your lifeblood. And then everything revolves around that. People get engaged by coming to the games, and then they might become givers. And then from, you know, givers, they might become more, you know, involved in other ways, or corporate sponsors, or other things. But it starts with attending the games.
How do you bridge the gap of the casual fan who's coming and buying a ticket because there isn't a huge premium on tickets to convincing them to buy those season tickets?
Well, one, there's just a financial value to it. I mean, one, you know, if you chose to go to X number of games and you were going to go season, you know, a single game, then you just do the simple math on it, and you would have been better off. You would have probably gotten an extra ticket in there, depending on the package. So, I mean, there's a financial deal. One, there's benefits. I mean, as a season ticket holder, you're going to get first privilege on bowl games and bowl opportunities, and different seating opportunities that come about. So there's a privilege there. There's something that our season ticket holders have that others don't. But one of the greatest things about season ticket holders is you're going to develop a community, a friendship. It's where you go on Saturdays, or in this case, we've got a Thursday night game. But this, it's almost like a fraternity or sorority that it's a social event. And so if you sit in section, you know, whatever the section is, whatever the row is, whatever the seat is, you're expecting when you go back there to be rekindling relationships that you built the previous year, the year before, and some of our fans, you know, 40, 50 years relationships in an area. And so it's about rekindling those things. And so you haven't been a season ticket holder, you're missing on an emotional connection and a social connection with other people that are around you. When you score that touchdown, when we win that game on a late second field goal, and you get to share that moment with those 20 or 30 people just in your little area, that's what you're missing when you're not a season ticket holder.
Well, I think you just fired everybody up, because I think we might have hit one of your passions. Did we hit a passion?
Well, I have a lot of passions in life, but, you know, I think, I'm in this case, I'm advocating for our students, because I've sat in their shoes, and I've run out that tunnel, not that tunnel, but I've run out a tunnel, and you know what, quite frankly, I've been on both ends. I've been on an end where my first game at Northwestern State was against Southern, and there wasn't a, but you couldn't sit anywhere. There was more people than you can imagine. And I've been at other places where we've run out, and, you know, you could literally count the people in the stands. And in both of those, there's a feeling associated with it. One is very positive, and one is very negative. And so we want to be as supportive as we can. It's not just about the actual individuals. It's about your institution. It's, you know, that you're all one. You're together. You're coming together for one purpose. And I'm excited. I'm ready for the ball to kick off. I don't know about you guys, but I am.
I'm more than ready, and a week and a half feels almost too far away. Tommy, we really appreciate you coming on the show, and look forward to having you on Bleed Tech Blue Radio in the future.
Yep, thank you so much, guys.
Thanks, Tommy.
All right, bye-bye.
Tommy McClellan, Athletics Director for Louisiana Tech Athletics. Well, it's that time again. Time to shut her down. We'll be back the same time, same place, 6 to 7:30 here on ESPN Radio 97.7.